This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 90 Time, the game live on a Sunday morning, 10 o'clock, 10.02 to be exact. If you would like to be a guest caller, which I refer to as guest, on the program, 404-726-0929. I enjoy talking to you, chatting on a Sunday morning, grabbing a cup of coffee, and though I've already had two, so, Noel, I had to, there are times where I will drink three or four cups of coffee. You ever do that? And I just like, I don't know, break out the pot. The next thing you know, I'm like, it's not a coffee cup. I've got like a Tervis. and then I ruin the Tervis because it's so black with, you know, the coffee in it, and it ruins the Tervis. And then you go, oh, I got to get a new Tervis. Then you go to like the Walmart, you know, or the Sam's Club, and $17 for a Tervis. You're like, oh my God. Jeez. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to chat about. 5:30 pregame. It is a 6 o'clock City Edition game tonight against the Philadelphia 76ers at State Farm Arena. Hawks going for three wins in a row, a half ahead of Orlando. You at number 7, Hawks are with 12 games to go. They're the number 7 seed because in the play-in, that number 7 seed only has to win a game, and the number 7 seed gets that at home. So that's the position you want to be in if you're the Atlanta Hawks. Now, prior to that, coming up at the top of the hour, we'll take you to coverage of the NCAA tournament today, final day of the round of 32, and then live coverage of UConn, Florida, followed by live coverage of Baylor and Duke. So we encourage you to take part in the program here and be a guest and join me and talk. If you would like to talk about the Hawks and their race to 7 in a row and get the team, you're welcome to do so at 404-7929. You want to talk about any frustration you have with Atlanta United after the draw at FC Cincinnati? You're welcome to do that as well. I always like to present three questions in an hour, but I'll go ahead and throw the three. The tournament, there's some people who are saying, and I mentioned this in the first hour, that because of the Big Ten and the SEC and how they are running college athletics, which they are, that this tournament is lacking Cinderellas and lacking excitement, that it's been pretty dull, that it's so chalky. Do you agree with that? I'm just curious. It is a... you know, case where I think we're in the new world where the Big Ten and the SEC run the show. So this is to be expected. This is what they wanted, by the way. They wanted to dominate the tournament. They wanted to be the Big Ten SEC Invitational anyway. So do you think this is dull? I'm kind of curious. Braves, here it is, game week, Thursday, opening day, lot of expectations. I don't see any reason we shouldn't have a parade. I see no reason we should not have a parade. Now, granted, I think this time we need to slow the buses down if they're going to do the same route, maybe a little bit slower through downtown before they get up to the Battery, but I see no reason not to have a parade. They have every element on this team to be the best ball. And I'm curious if you think I ought to temper my expectations, slow my roll, be realistic or whatever, because I think realistically they're the best team in baseball. But I could be wrong. 404-726-09. Of course, that means that we have, you know, what, again, opening day coming up this week, and we'll see. A tough opener. Look, they got to go on the road and play seven games at San Diego for four, and then at L.A. against the Dodgers. I guess the good news is you kind of get one of those trips right out of the way, right off the bat, and then you come home to play Miami in the opener. We also have, so we got the Braves. We've got the, if you watch United, get the Braves. Should I temper my expectations, or do you expect the Braves? Well, expect is a tough term. Do you think that we ought to have a parade this year and nothing less is acceptable? Is this tournament, this men's tournament, been exciting to you? Or is it interesting because it's the best teams in the nation? Or do you think it's dull because it lacks kind of juice? And then, again, tomorrow, we're a month away from the NFL draft. We will continually talk. Kevin Knight at the Falcoholic has put up his big mock draft this morning. I was reading it, and he's got the Falcons trading with the Chargers. They're sending a couple of picks to the Chargers, getting a third rounder and a late fourth rounder, and then using the pick at number 22 to take Nick Skirton, the big edge out of Texas A&M, which is fine, by the way. But will they trade down? We can't know what they're going to do. Okay. Will they trade down? Could they trade down? Maybe. Could they trade Kirk Cousins prior to the draft? Maybe. Will they have to take Kirk Cousins into the year? Maybe. Do they need to get more draft picks? Yes. Does that mean that they're automatically going to trade down? No. It just really kind of depends. I think trading down is going to be something that they don't do till draft day. If they're sitting on draft day where they are now, with a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and 2 7ths. They don't have a third, a fifth, or a sixth. There's going to be a lot of temptation to trade down, sure. Especially if they view the guys who are in that 21 to 23 range as being kind of the same as the guy that would be available to them at 15. So, yes. And especially if they want to use that third rounder, pick up a third rounder to move up in the second round to get somebody like an Igbuka if he's there at the top of the second round. So, yes. So I can see where trading down might happen. However, and this is the however in this, that's not Terry Fontenot's M.O. when it comes to drafting. I'm just telling you what his M.O. is. His M.O. is to not only stay where he is, but to take the best player available regardless of position. Now, this year, you'd be hard-pressed to argue that the best player available, if it were a quarterback or a running back, that you should be taking that guy. And it won't be, so we don't have to worry about it, but there's absolutely no reason to do that. Or for that matter, even an offensive lineman. So, but if the best player available, if, you know, McMillan or Burton, if you love Luther Burton and he's there at 15, could they take a wide receiver? Yes, they could take a wide receiver. I keep telling you guys, oh, they'll burn the stadium down. Well, again, if McMillan for some reason falls to 15 and you're sitting there at 15 going, hey, I've got him number four on my board. I need that stretch over the top receiver. All right, we're taking him. You know, and with a 15th pick, you know, everybody, and then the meltdown happens. I'm telling you, okay, that's fine. I'm just telling you what the MO is. 404-726-0929. It's what Terry Fontenot does. And remember, his job, his butt on the line. And how is he going to win 10 or 11 games this year? He's going to improve the defense so that they're mid. And I think he's kind of gotten to a point where they're closer to mid. And then he's going to kind of roll the dice and say, we got to outscore people. And how do you outscore people? Well, you put the ball in Michael Penix's hand and Bijan and Kyle Pitts and Drake London and all your playmakers and Tyler Algier and Ray Ray, Mooney, and maybe you add another playmaker to it and say, yeah, we got to add another playmaker because we need to score 32 points a game. And that's how we're going to win 10 games. We've got to become a team that scores 32 a game. And just scores a ton. And we are an offensive-oriented team. And one of the things this team has not been in a long time is a vertical passing team. And you have a quarterback who is certainly adept and capable of being a vertical passing quarterback. But unfortunately, this team doesn't really have they've got some guys who can get downfield, but is it somebody that is a vertical passing threat? That's a difference. Can Mooney get downfield? Yes. Can Ray Ray? Yes. Can Pitts? Yes. Pitts is probably the biggest of the three in terms of vertical threat. But it's not anybody that you necessarily on defense have to account for. Now, if you get a guy that If you get an Igbuka, then you go, okay, we got to watch that guy going vertical on us. Now you start shading safeties, and that's going to free up other things, right? See, right, so we'll see. You got to lean into it. I mean, you got to lean into the offense, guys and gals. You say, well, we need to get an edge. Okay, that's fine. I understand that you think we need to get an edge because, you know, our pass rush sucks. I think they've tried to lean into that. You know, they signed Morgan Fox and Leonard Floyd. They do have Braylon Trice coming in. They went out and got Diablo, and they changed out from Landman to a fast linebacker who could help, Caden Ellis. Hopefully, Troy Anderson's healthy. They may be viewing this and saying, hey, listen, we got enough weapons on the edge that our pass rush will be mid. You know, and you're going, that's not good enough. Well, it may be good enough for them. Mid pass rush, which would be a big leap up from where they were last couple of years, might be enough for them if they can score 32 points a game. Remember, guy's job's on the line. He's got to get to 10 wins now. This is not about drafting a rotational player. This is not about drafting for anything in the future. Any trade they make is going to be designed to get an additional draft pick immediately. Immediately, okay? They need help right now. This isn't about 2026 or 2027 when you're the general manager and your butt is on the line, okay? So all the moves are designed to win right now because this general manager has to win right now. For that matter, so does the head coach. Because if the general manager gets fired, so does the new defensive coordinator. If the general manager gets fired, what happens? There's no GM in the world that's going to come in and say, yes, I'll accept the current coaching staff. No, that new GM that comes in is going to say, all right, I'm going to take the job, but I get to pick the coaching staff, which means Raheem's out. So their butts are on the line here. So any moves they've made so far, any moves they make between now and draft day, any moves they make between draft day and the start of the regular season are all designed to do one thing, win now. And they've got to get 10 wins. They've got to win the NFC South, which, you know, they're probably sitting around going, man, we had it last year, didn't we? 6-3 and three games up. Oh, my gosh. And we're golden because they're reacting to what happened last year. If that team last year at 6-3 and three games up just continues along, right, and they win a couple, you know, they get to 10 wins and they make the playoffs, even if they had lost in the first round of the playoffs, we'd be sitting here in an entirely kind of different view. They could be making moves going into the future and setting up 2026 and not having to – knee-jerk is the wrong word, wrong term – not having to be so reactive – to that, okay? But unfortunately, they have to be reactive to that because their job is on the line now. We all know that. We all understand that. It's clear as day. So do you think the tournament is exciting or dull? Is it parade or nothing for the Atlanta Braves? And do you agree with the Falcoholic that as you sit a month ahead of the draft, that trading down is the route that they'll take? I'm just curious as to, and it may be. Kevin Knight at the Falcoholic may be right. He's not alone. There have been others who have said the Falcons are going to trade down. A lot of people have because, you know, they need to have more in this draft than just a first, a second, and a fourth, which I understand. Makes sense to me. But the most important thing is to get those first and second round guys. They have to be immediate impact guys. You can't be trading down to take a guy who's going to be this Nick Skirton. The only problem I have is he a guy that steps in and starts for you day one? Is he the third down rush edge guy day one? Is he ahead of Leonard Floyd? Is he ahead of Arnold Ebiketie? I don't know. Beats me. Do I think he's going to be the guy that comes in and changes the dynamic of that pass rush immediately? I don't know. Doesn't strike me that way. So, and they need somebody to come in and be effective immediately. There's no rotational guys here. Even though it's a rotational defense, there's no rotational guys. All right, quick break. 404-726-0929. Braves, Falcons, tournament dull, exciting. How do you feel about this? SEC underachieving. Is that something that you're seeing? Is the SEC failing here, or do we have to just kind of wait to see how it plays? I think we have to wait to see how it plays out. You get three of the final four, you get the national title matchup, it's not a fail. 404-726-0929 on Sports Radio 90 Time the Game. Radio 90 Time the Game, Northern Kia Studios, Sunday morning. Again, top of the hour, NCAA tournament coverage. There are only three teams outside the Power 5 that are left. Power 5 being SEC, Big 10, Big 12, Big East, and ACC. There's only one ACC team, of course, that's Duke. And they'll be playing Baylor today at 2:40. We'll have that game for you. Yeah, the only three teams that are left that would be, air quotes, Cinderella, are St. Mary's, Colorado State, and New Mexico. That's it. Outside of that, everybody else is pretty chalky. So does that make this tournament dull? Some people say it does. Where do you stand on the Falcons, the Braves, the Hawks? You got a lot to chew up here. Let's get to your calls here and chat on a Sunday morning. Let's welcome Jim into the program. Hey, Jim.
How you doing today? Good. There are two positions that touch the ball every play. The quarterback is number one. Your center's number two. All right, there's seven centers. All rated highly. Jared Wilson, John Majors, and Seth McLaughlin.
Okay, we don't need to go down the list. I mean, we're never, all right, that's fine. What's your point?
Okay. There you go. Then the third most important, Caleb McGarry.
All right, hang on. You're going to lose me. Jim, you're going to lose me. What was your point about that?
Well, we just neglected and not done over the... The last time we had a real good center was Alex Mack. What do we have to do? Overpay to get somebody good.
Well, so, I think they like Ryan Neuzel. They obviously tendered him. And,
if he was any
and
good.
I thought Drew Dalma was pretty good. I mean,
but
okay,
Caleb McGarry.
I get to talk
We'll extend him. He's not protecting the quarterback's backside. Now we got a left. And the quarterback, now he's more important because he's collecting the backside.
So, Jim, what is you're saying? I believe
okay,
that, yes.
Seven centers.
Right, Jim,
there's
stop. Stop. Jim, stop. Jim, yeah. Stop. Okay? it's a conversation.
Well, just hear me
okay?
out here.
Okay, Jim. Oh my God!
Seven guys available.
Jim, do you think I don't care about that, Jim? Do you think that they will draft a center if they can get a third round pick here? Is that what you think?
I'm saying with seven guys available, and the only person that's got somebody really, really unstable besides really us are the Patriots, which who they just signed. But there's seven guys, all of them. A guy on national radio was talking about how close they are rated. All of them real good. How can Terry go wrong in the fourth or fifth round?
He doesn't have a fifth round pick at the moment. He does not have a fifth round pick at the moment. That's how he can go wrong. So your point is, again, in larger picture here, that center, drafting a center, which I think that they certainly could do, that you should think they ought to trade down in order to pick up more picks and cover some of the mistakes, but some of the holes that they have in the draft because of previous moves.
Previous years and moves, I mean, it's just if you do every year you don't do, it just accumulates and snowballs for the next year, as that guy was talking about on certain teams, how they just stay at the bottom.
I don't care about any team but the Falcons. So, again, back to this year, you think they ought to – And by the way, you can make the case, Jim, that they ought to trade down in order to accrue some more draft picks so that they can comfortably take a center, maybe in the fourth round or even as high as the third round.
And then next year, we're going to have to replace.
I don't care about next year. Jim, next year doesn't mean anything. Don't talk to me about next year. Don't care about next year. Only care about now.
Well,
so don't talk to me about next year.
You got your weakest offensive lineman protecting his backside, Caleb.
Yeah,
McGarry.
That's why Charlie Werner is so important to help chip over. Thanks, Jim. I do appreciate the call. Yeah, guys and gals, I'm going to go back to what I said. There is nothing in the vernacular of Flowery Branch that says next year, okay? Nothing. If they had 6-3, three games up, if they had won the South, which they should have, and even if they had lost in the opening round of the playoffs, we could be talking a little bit about how we move forward next year. There is no next year. Talking about it is pointless, all right? Because it's only right now because the general manager's butt is on the line. It's only right now. He's not going to make any moves for future draft picks or future considerations. Well, Johnny, re-sign people to long-term. Yes, to create more room, make moves right now. To that point, they're not done in free agency, by the way. they could go out and get a couple more guys. So, and again, they're, you know, putting depth and rotations mostly on defense where I think they'll look. Thanks, Jim, for the call. Let's go to James at 404-726-0929. James, welcome to the show.
How you doing? Question I had about the one thing I wanted to ask you about the NCAA basketball tournament was that, you know, with UGA, you know, with the Bulldogs, you know, our football team's real good. And do you think that sort of helped our basketball team out as well? And what do you think UGA needs to do as a team to get they could get further along in the tournament? I thought it was real cool they was able to make it, but I was wondering what you think a path forward might be. And then I was going to talk to you about that. So.
All right, well, just real quick on that. Yes, college basketball, men's college basketball in the state of Georgia has been woefully inept. And I guess the hope is that White and Stoudemire, the coaches of the two big teams, are going to kind of turn that corner a little bit. We saw some indications that they might be able to do it, and we'll see if Dominique's kid really has an impact. The reason is that they have not been able to keep – this state produces, James, top-tier talent – in every single sport. Not just everybody talks about the top-tier high school football, which is true. Top-tier high school basketball, top-tier high school baseball, volleyball, you name the sport, it comes out of the state of Georgia. It's top-tier. Not been able to capture, you know, the occasional Ant-Man, but they've not been able to capture the best players in the state and keep them here. They've got to do a better job of that through whatever means necessary in order to do so, and it's up to UGA to be able to do that. I think Wilkins is a start, but again, the best players in the state, again, are for the most part, are leaving. And so, you know, you got to do a better job of holding on to those guys, especially the academy guys, and keeping the Atlanta, you know, star players in state here and not letting them go to the, you know, Floridas or Kentuckys or Ohio States or wherever they're headed. So the answer to that is you just got to, recruit better, sign better, and hopefully we get some better college basketball because it's been really, the two best programs, you know, over the last, say, 10 years when it comes to the NCAA men's tournament have been like Georgia State and Kennesaw State. And so, I need to see more. But, yeah, I think that's the charge that both have. They ought to be better. Anyway, what about the Falcons?
Well, basically, from a lot of people on the outside looking in at the Falcons, what I see them as is a dumpster fire where a lot of our good players wanting out of a team because we're not going anywhere. And I think like Terry Fontenot has had 4 years of proving himself and to build a good team and everything, and he hadn't done that. And we're tied for Carolina as far as being out of the playoffs, and the only person behind us beyond that would be the Jets. And you know, when it's time for Terry Fontenot to either produce results or get out of here, you know, and lock them. But like the center, you know, it's sort of frustrating they didn't keep Dahlman because Noozle didn't play as good as Dahlman did, you know, and I think we need a new center because he's just not he don't handle the ball all that cleanly, and that's what costs us plays and games if we're not careful, you know, and then you look at like how the team's going, you know, we brought back Felipe Franks from like the Panthers, and I like Felipe Franks as a player and everything, but he's just sort of substandard. He's a cut from somebody else.
Yeah, but don't worry about him. I don't want to waste any of my airtime, James, talking about Felipe Franks. He's not relevant. Okay. So let's talk about what it is. I think the Falcons, of course you can never know. I think they're a pretty good football team. On paper they're better than anybody in the NFC South. It's just up to them to go out and produce. This is a team that can win 10 games. They play that way.
But see, my concern with the Falcons, though, is it's like when we played Carolina right there at the end of a season, you know, Carolina blew us out, you know, and it's like, you know, Carolina's gaining ground on us, and we don't have that momentum that they have, you know, and so we're not getting better, and it seems like everybody, you know, especially.
Well, are we not getting better? I mean, is Michael Penix now moving into a starting quarterback and growing as a starting quarterback not getting better? Is hiring Jeff Ulbrich to run a defense and change it from the disaster Jimmy Lake not getting better? I don't know. I mean, I think so. I'd like to believe so.
But we got to rebuild our whole defense, you know, and then you got to put the offense together and. We're trying to hang
well, the
on
offense you don't have to put together. Mm-hmm. The offense you don't have to – wait, hang on. You don't have to put the offense together. The offense is lethal. The offense is really good.
Yeah, you have to put the defense back together. And then with the offense,
right.
You got like Kyle Pitts that don't need to be on the team anymore. I mean, people say that He's, people say,
why wouldn't you want him on the team? He's arguably, James, one of the top two or three. He's one of the top two or three. Okay, you don't want to listen. He's one of the top two or three deep threat tight ends in the entire NFL, correct?
He might be, but he hadn't showed it to me in the time he's been here.
Yeah. I'm sorry, did you miss all the touchdowns that he had last year? Did you miss the game where he had the two touchdowns over the middle? Did you miss the fact that he had the touchdown catch of the year against Washington? Did you miss that?
Well, I've seen him drop the ball and stuff, too. I mean, he's mishandled.
Oh, that's what you see. See, you only see the negative, but you don't see the positive. Right. Okay, I got you. This Pitts thing just drives me nuts. All right, I appreciate it, James. You know, Michael Penix made it pretty clear. He's the star quarterback of this team, and as he goes, this offense goes. Right? We all agree with that. I know they have Bijan, they have Drake. Michael Penix really, really wants to work with Kyle Pitts. Everybody just hates on Pitts, which is fine. Go ahead. Hate on Pitts. All you see is the negative with him. And I'm telling you, he's a stretch tight end. I think they haven't been able to unlock him and figure it out. I said before the season last year, they ought to move him off tight end and make him a wide out. Just turn him into a 6'7", 6'8" wide receiver and stretch the field with him because he's a mismatch nightmare for cornerbacks. They didn't do that. Now, I mean, they did. They ran some plays for him, but as a big play tight end, there were a lot of big plays that he made last year. And everybody just wants to look at he had the one interception down on the goal line where he hit the ball, and it was an unfortunate thing where he's just reaching out trying to make a play. It was not a good look. I'm not going to argue that it wasn't. But everybody wants to hate on them. Michael Penix has said clearly, I want Kyle Pitts. I can unlock him. And if he does, the Kyle Pitts, who made a Pro Bowl, was a Pro Bowl tight end, who was at the time the second all-time in the history of the NFL, as a rookie, the second all-time rookie leader in yardage by a tight end in the history of the NFL. And people think he's just trash. And I'm like, okay, I'm not really sure how, but is he underperformed because he was the number four pick? Yeah, okay, you can make that argument. Trash? All right, I don't know what you're looking at, but all right. And it still makes me shake my head. Again, this is a prove it year for him. They picked up his fifth year option. By the way, could they trade him before the draft? Sure. And what do you say about that? Well, you know, I want some value for it if they want to make that trade. But Penix has made it pretty clear. He wants Kyle Pitts to be on this team. 404-726-0929 is the number as we take you to 11 o'clock in our coverage of the NCAA tournament. Two games today for you. Live UConn, Florida, Baylor, and Duke back-to-back. And then Hawks and 76ers all ahead on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Busy day on the radio station. Coming up top of the hour, we'll take you to Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA round of 32. And a doubleheader for you live on 92.9 The Game. UConn and Florida. Two schools that have both, and not too well, in the case of UConn, immediate past, won back-to-back national titles. Of course, Florida did with that, the Noah and Horford years. And then UConn has won back-to-back national titles going for three in a row. I wonder how many fans realize that UConn is going for three wins, three national titles in a row. And then they go, yeah, they are. Yeah, they're going for three in a row. And by the way, do you remember who they beat in the title game? No. I mean, beat Purdue and Zach Edey last year. They beat San Diego State the year before. So, UConn going for three straight national titles. Now it's not as good a team as Sean Tate said. But interesting matchup, UConn and Florida. Then you're going to get VJ Edgecombe and Cooper Flagg in a Baylor-Duke game. Those two could be the top two picks in the NBA draft. Everybody knows about Cooper Flagg. VJ Edgecombe of Baylor is... he's like Victor Oladipo. He's 6'5". He's a wing guy, but boy, he can move and move and move and move and move. So we'll see how. I mean, he's great defensively. He's like Dyson Daniels, and I mean, he's going to be that kind of player in the NBA. You know, thief and blocker and do it at both ends of the court. VJ Edgecombe, Baylor, and then we'll take it to the Hawks and 76ers. Hawks, you know, again, keep out 12 games to go, game and a half ahead of the Orlando Magic. Let's see if they can lock down that number 7 seed in the play-in, win that one home game, and then move into the regular playoffs. And we'll see what happens from that point on. Because it's all gravy for the Atlanta Hawks, right? It's all gravy. And we'll see what we get into the offseason and how they improve their bench. Because I think we know the starting five, right? what they do in the draft and things of that nature. Back to the tournament, UConn, Florida, Baylor, Duke, back-to-back. And then we'll have Illinois, Kentucky at 5:15, St. Mary's and Alabama at 6:10, Colorado State and Maryland at 7:10, 7:45, Ole Miss and Iowa State, 8:40, Nuevo Mexico, and Michigan State, 9:40, Oregon and Arizona. And when the Oregon-Arizona game goes final, we will have a Sweet 16. 404-726-0929. The passionate fans that we just had on in the last segment, Jim and James, and I love passionate fans. I find it so interesting how I'm a passionate fan, Jim's a passionate fan, James is a passionate fan, and we see things so through different prisms. Now, am I as frustrated as anybody as an Atlanta fan going on my 51st year of being an Atlanta fan, and I have three major titles to show for it, two World Series and an MLS Cup? And that's it. That's what I got in 51, going on my 51st year of being a fan. 51 of those things? Yeah. Do I think we should have had more? Of course. Braves should have had more. Falcons should have won a Super Bowl. Yeah. Hawks have grossly underachieved as a franchise in the fact that they've never even been to an NBA final. So, sure, yes, I'm frustrated. But I can only, despite my frustration, I can only take things as what they are. The Braves ought to win the World Series this year. I think they're still with the Dodgers. I think they may actually be the better team. I think the Braves are the best team in baseball. There's no excuse for them not to win the World Series. Just go out and do it. That's what you got to do. Atlanta United, I got to see them kind of grow over the course of the season. I think there's some growing pains in this first five games. And hopefully, once we get into summertime and into the fall, this is a long season. They'll start to kind of come together a little bit, and we'll see a lot more, out of them, like we saw last year, where they kind of came together at the end of the year. So hopefully that happens, and we get more out of Atlanta United. So, but it's kind of wait and see, and that'd be great. I think the Hawks have a bright upside. I was talking to, about going after the center for Michigan, Wolf, who's 7 foot and 260 pounds, and letting him bang it out down there with, Okongwu, and that would be kind of the guy I would target in the draft. So you might want to watch Michigan in the next game and look at him and just say, that big dude. Yeah. I'm thinking, a five, depending on where the Hawks draft, of course. And it's hard to say right now exactly where they're going to draft because they don't have a pick. It's the Lakers' pick. So, I mean, it's probably not going to be real high. I mean, the Lakers, I'm kind of hoping maybe a late season swim would help. That would help. Early exit would help. Root against the Lakers because the worse the Lakers finish, the better the Hawks pick is going to be. So that's where your pick is right now. And as for the Atlanta Falcons, I am still remain fairly hopeful that this is going to be a good team. Most of the people that I get to, interact with when it comes to the Falcons are, down in the mouth. Noel, have you noticed how down in the mouth and how woe is us Falcons fans are? This is why I'm so mad at Kirk Cousins and will always be mad at Kirk Cousins. Did they forget that the Falcons were 6-3, three games up. They had beaten Tampa twice. They had gone to Philadelphia and won, walked into your trap, take your trap. They were set to win the NFC South. And you listen, and then, of course, the whole Kirk Cousins thing happened, and you listen to fans like, we suck. We're the Jets. We're the worst team in the NFL. And I'm like, really?
Yep, that's why I've decided that my brand is sports positivity, because it's enough. Down in the mouth, people around here. I like to point out the positive things. Now, as far as the we part goes, I pay my money, I sit there, I gotta watch the team fall off a cliff. So yeah, we didn't have fun watching Kirk Cousins fall off a cliff. The swag surfing was fun, but sometimes you seem to lose, or you can lose perspective getting all caught up in the emotional.
Because the way I view it, and this is just how I see it, I think the Falcons offense has, again, it's all potential. You got to go out and do it. And we've only seen three games of Michael Penix, a quarterback. But this offense has the potential to be really good. One of the things they did in the offseason is, and one of the callers mentioned, the quarterback center exchange with Neusel. Well, yeah, you've got to just work on that. That's all. Neusel's a big step down from Dolman. Not according to the Falcons, who see him and know him. Is Dolman better? Yeah, I think so. But is there a big difference between the two? In run blocking, maybe. Dahlman's a really good run blocker. But from a pass pro situation, Neusel and Dahlman are the same guy. Can they draft a center? Sure, of course. They went, one of the untold things is they went into, and you didn't pay much attention to it because nobody was focused on it. I'm not mad at you for that. Is that they went pretty heavy in free agency in getting veteran depth. They signed four guys for veteran depth on that offensive line. And we're talking Kyle Hinton. We're talking about really good veteran players. They signed four of them. Elijah Wilkinson, Brandon Parker, Storm Norton. Those are four really good offensive linemen. So you now have a offensive line with, you know, the extension of Jake Matthews and Bergeron and Neusel, and, of course, Lindstrom and McGarry, with Charlie Werner helping to, you know, on the blind. There could be a lot of Charlie Werner over there on the blind side, which is why if you want to get Kyle Pitts touches and targets, you may have to play him outside of tight end because you're going to need Charlie Werner on the field in order to help with the blind side, you know, with McGarry to protect Penix. All right? Okay. So, but I think if you look from a standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, and you see what Zach Robinson in his second year might be able to do, I think the Falcons' offense could be really good. I've been talking top five in the NFL. They could be really, really good. And you can lean on that offense to win you games. And all you have to do with Jeff Ulbrich is become a mid defense. If you become a mid defense, this team wins the NFC South. They win double-digit games. They make the playoffs. All you have to do is be mid. That's it. Just be a mid defense. And I think some of the moves that they've made so far here in the offseason are designed for them to be mid. Now, remember, they're hamstrung on a lot of things. Yes, Grady's gone. That hurts. I understand that that's a blow to the psyche of the city in a lot of ways. I get it. Trust me, it hurt me too. But, you know, again, so many things that are unknown to all of us. They're unknown to all of us. And that is when you have a new defense coordinator, A, what scheme is he going to run? Though I think he's tipped his hand a little bit by getting rid of Nate Landman. Forget, set Grady aside for a second. By getting rid of Nate Landman, who is a big, prototypical, old school, 1970s, you know, vicious linebacker, pounds on the run, kind of holds down the middle of the fort, for a Divine Diablo, who is Deion Jones. He's a speed. Diablo at Virginia Tech was a safety. He's a big box safety. It's almost like playing six defensive backs because we couldn't cover anybody out of the flat. Landman couldn't cover anybody. He did not have the foot speed. And without Troy Anderson in there, the Falcons got burned time and time again by running backs on wheel routes and tight ends and, you know, passes over the middle. You know, how many times did you see, just without thinking about it, how many times did you see the Falcons have an opponent last year in third down and eight and you said, oh, this is going to be a first down, and it was a first down. How many times did that happen? What's the over-under on the number of times where it was third down and seven or more where you went, what was the conversion rate of opponents against the Falcons? Because, damn, it felt like 100%, didn't it? Yeah, John, it felt like, right, because they didn't have any linebackers that could cover. And so they got burned time and time and time again. So Albert comes in and says, that can't happen no more. I got to get, and what does Diablo do? Does he rush the passer? A little bit, but what does he do? He covers. Deion Jones was a cover linebacker. He was, again, a same kind of guy, big box safety, playing linebacker. He's the guy that when the tight end releases, I'm in your grill. Because what was Deion Jones when he did it? This Ulbrich, again, linebacker coach, 2016, and in that year, 2016, what did Deion Jones do? What were his big plays were what? Were they sacks? No. Was he stuffing the run? No. His big plays were, oh, they were interceptions. It was the pick six. It was the jump interception to seal the win against the Swampers in the end zone. That's what Deion Jones did. He was essentially a third safety. And that's what Diablo is, essentially a third safety. So, again, what do you want to do? You want to be a fast defense. If you can't be a physical, big physical defense, you want to be a fast defense. The other thing we can't know is, I'm in, and I don't know this. I'm just telling you, I can't know all this. I would love to be able to sit down with Jeff and have an off-the-record conversation where I could tell you I have sources who tell me, okay? But I got to believe, see, Albert comes in, he puts the tape in, right? Well, used to with VHS, but he turns on the video, okay? And he watches them to grade the players, you know, back and forth individually on this play. What does he do well? I'm guessing that he looked at Rucaroro and goes, why? They traded up for this guy, right? Yeah. Why weren't they playing him? I don't know. You have to ask Jimmy. Because I think Ulbrich looked at Rook and went, this guy ought to be playing. Because there were times, again, and just think of the Falcons. In the limited time that Rook Aurora, there were times, suddenly Rook is in the backfield making plays. I'm like, hey, there's Rook Aurora. Oh, he's making plays. And Ulbrich probably said the same thing. Hey, well, this guy ought to be starting for us. can we really get rid of Grady? Well, who's better? Who's better? Is Rook better than Grady? Maybe yes. How can you say that? Because Grady's 30. That's why. You lose a half a step. He got injured. And all it takes, guys and gals, boys and girls, is a half a step. Half a step. That half a step is the difference between... All right, it's like Dennis Paulson played professional golf. Little side story. National long driving champion, then got his tour card, played on the PGA Tour. He's does PGA Tour radio now. He's a... I played golf with Dennis a number of times. He was my golf guy on the radio when I was in California. No, Dennis. He would always show off in the golf course. You know, embarrass you. You'd flush one about 275, and he's like, I can get there with a 9-iron. he'd pound it. He's like Bryson DeChambeau. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But we were chatting once, and I said, you know, what's the difference between like the Korn Ferry guys and the PGA Tour guys? And he said, do you know that the difference between being on the secondary tour and having to hoof it around and winning majors, the difference between those two players is one half of one stroke per round. One half of one stroke per round on scoring average. Okay? The point of that is that's how close everything is. One half, one stroke. And when you lose one half of one step, you're shot. I'm not saying great thing. Once you do as a professional athlete, that one half of one step is the difference between you being really effective and you being Tack McKinley, a guy that almost gets sacked. That's it. All right, I'm not familiar with this clock. Do I take a break now or do I take it to the end? What are we doing here? Oh, okay. I take a break now. Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Is this the end? Do I say goodbye? Oh, okay. Just check it. Thanks to Jim and James and Deshaun Tate and to Noel White. I will talk to you soon. Enjoy the basketball today right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.